as everyone knows, besides my father being a Shiva Taravadas, he works for the OU every Thursday. And the truth is that I have many, many opportunities to speak to Rabbi Ganek over the course of those months. And we used to speak maybe a couple of times a week, three times a week, sometimes 3 times a day. And I went to the OU the first time in 25 years. My father was working over there this past year, before the summer. I was never there. And my father was going to be there a short time, and I usually teach, so I can't be there. So I know Rabbi Katz, and Rabbi Ganek one time came over to my father in Kessler Institute. And Rabbi Katz was saying over that he knew my father was going to be better because when they spoke to him, he remembered something from 30 years before that. He was even clearer than Rabbi Ganek. So he knew he was going to come back. The truth is, the only thing my father remembers from that week and a half in Kessler was Rabbi Ganek and Rabbi Katz coming in. That's the only thing he remembers. I see, it's a siyata d'shmaya that, you know, sometimes a bunch of wants to show everybody else that he'll be okay. So at the right time, exactly, he remembered exactly what he was supposed to remember. Besides that, he didn't start remembering anything until after he got into St. Barnabas. So that's a, you know, there's many, many stories like that I could save here for another hour, but you know, now we're going to hear from Rabbi Ganek. But yes, thank you.
Rabbi Weinberg mentioned that in this week's Torah portion, we read Mikri Bikur, the Parsha Barami Oved Ovid, which is the text that the pilgrim would bring when he would bring the first fruit, his Bikurim, to Yerushalayim. That same text, of course, is the core text of the Haggadah, which we say the night of Pesach at the Seder. In the Tshuvas Hagoyim, they already question, why was that chosen? After all, one would have thought the explicit story of the Exodus that we have in Sefer Shmos, those are the more appropriate, you know, psukim to read. Why was this parsha chosen? So I'd like to give two answers, and I think both of them relate to Rabbi Belsky and to the Suda we're having today. One answer, this is what I heard from my Rebbe from Salvechik, the Rav Zatzal. He said that the night of Pesach is a night of Torah study. Therefore we want to interpret it, this somewhat obscure parsha, not only the explicit psukim that you have in Sefer Shmos, Torah Shebichtav, but also through the methodology and the tools, the oral tradition, Torah Shebi'al Peh, as the Mishnah says, V'doresh is called a parsha kula. The other reason that I would suggest is that the night of the Seder is a night of Hodor, of Hal Vodor. Rav Chaim said that one of the differences between a Sipur, Mitzias Mitzrayim's Chis, it's Mitzrayim, is the requirement also of Halal, to thank God for the redemption from Mitzrayim, from Egypt, and his constant care. And therefore, in terms of Hodor, this parsha, which the farmer says, and if we read the Mishnayos in Bikurim, how lyrical it is, as he brings up the first fruit to Yerushalayim, is the most appropriate text to say. Now, in this parsha, when we read it, after the Mishnah says, Dorish is called a parsha kula, we read the entire parsha. In fact, in the Haggadah, we don't say every single verse. The last one, V'yavenu el hamokam, v'adiyenu el hamokam azeh, v'yitin lam ez ha'oretz azos, eretz zoros chal v'dvash, that he brought us to this place and gave us a land running with milk and flowing with milk and honey, that's not part of the text of the Haggadah. Why is it excluded? So I heard from the Rav, he said three answers. One is because if we would include v'adiyenu, it would seem that the fatherless shomus of gul, we would include the hevesi. And it could be indeed that maybe in the time of the Beis Hamikdash they did say it. Just now we're in the exile, the Beis Hamikdash has been snatched away from us, so maybe it's not appropriate to say that possible. But he said another reason, which I think is the one I want to focus on today. He said that when God first speaks to Moshe at the burning bush, and Moshe is the most reluctant of prophets. He doesn't, why me? I'm a stutterer. I'm not the right person for this. So God's response to him is essentially this. You know, the purpose of Yetzias Mitzrayim, of the Exodus, is not just to get to the land of Israel. It's not just political freedom. It's not just liberation. It's ultimately to come to Har Sinai, to Mount to Sinai, and for the Ribono Shel Olam to give the Torah. If I was looking for a political leader, if I was looking for a diplomat, God is essentially telling Moshe, there may be even better candidates than you, but that's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a Rebbe. I'm looking for somebody to be the Noisin HaTorah, to give the Torah. And the Rav said, he said, Eretz Yisrael was our destination, but Har Sinai was our destiny. And this, I think, dovetails what I said before, that Doresh Kol HaParsha, the night of the Seder is the night of Torah. And when we think about Rabbi Belsky, of course, within the context of the OU, but much, much broader, you know, we think of a man marked by destiny. Not only by this miraculous recovery, I mean, there were many shluchim lamakom, many people played a role in this remarkable recovery, which was, at many points, certainly at the beginning, was by no means obvious that we were going to reach this destination. But we reached this destination because, think, when we see Rabbi Belsky, we see a person, two qualities I see about him. First of all, actually more than two, first of all, the sense of destiny, of purpose, of mission, that drives him all the time. I mean, the crushing schedule that he handles in so many different areas. When I walked in, David said, you know, Rabbi Belsky, you know, you can just see from the diverse crowd he has, wears many hats. But he doesn't just wear many hats, he really wears many crowns. It's a regal quality of not only enormous erudition and knowledge, but it's he has this extraordinary insight. It's almost some divine gift to just drill down to the essential element. I see it in so many cases that we have in the OU. I can think of them. You know, we had a story once with a caterer, and I must say that I thought this caterer was a crook and we should throw him out. But you know, the insight to realize this was that what happened. It was an insight. The story is not so important, but. The insight that he brings to so many, you know, this combination of erudition, insight, and sensitivity, it's extraordinary and extreme, it's remarkable. Goy and says in the Gada, Milamish Hayusom and Tsuyanimsha. What is a Goy? What does it mean that we emerge as a nation, a great nation, Goy Godel? So I heard from Rav Soloveitchik, he quoted in the name of the Vilna Gaon, the Goy says the word, the etymology of the word Goy, which means nation, comes to the word gvir. Gvir means a countenance, a face. Because what marks the uniqueness of a person? It's his face. Kishem, Chazazak, and Moshe, Parchufayim, Shonim, Zemizek, Kachdeo, Seim, Shonim, Zemizek. Each face represents the uniqueness of each individual. And it's that sense of distinction, of uniqueness, that we achieved in the cauldron of Mitzrayim, of Egypt. Means a nation in terms of we work together, a utilitarian combination. Tovi mashnai min ha'echad. But a goy means a unique purpose and mission. That's called a goy kadosh. And that quality of mitzuyonim, of remarkable and unique, I think that's what we all recognize in Rabbi Belsky. This. Both because of his extraordinary, you know, intellectual gifts that he has, but his sensitivity, his concern, his compassion, and as I said before, his insight and courage. Those are what mark him for all of us and for Klal Yisrael in such a remarkable, such a unique individual. And that's why during this illness, Kotzvei Tevel, from one corner of the earth to the end to the other, the tefillos, the prayers, the concern, was so palpable. I know people will call me all the time, oh, you, I mean, how do you function? I was not the pastor and child. And I tell you that, you know, it wasn't just a question of the Shiloh, so Rabbi Gerstmann has a whole, you know, Zasafa, the diner has a whole list of questions. but the direction and the insight, it was in fact sorely missing. And therefore, this Suda Sodor, the words of Alami Ovid Ovi come very much to the fore. And we're happy that we reach this point, this destination. But we know that Rabbi Belsky, as a man of destiny, has many, many, many more things to accomplish with his extraordinary gifts that we have all been the beneficiaries of. And I want to just thank the doctors that care, the family, the extraordinary devotion. Another quality of Rabbi Belsky as a father, his Talmidim, you saw in all his different guises and phases and roles, in each one, it was mitzuyonoshon, excellence and uniqueness. And that's why we thank Hashem for this glorious recovery and hope that he will, seems to me it's almost complete, but the doctors will tell you what I just see, even in the short period, from when I told him some to see Mashas to now, this strength comes back, Michoel El Choyel, that he will make many more conquests for Torah, for Yiddishkeit, and for Klai Yisrael.
Anyway, this should be one of the more interesting speeches. I really start off to give it a little perspective over here. When my father got sick, that Moshe Shabbos Parshas Yisroi. I was in and out the whole day. Nobody left him before laning started. So he was a big problem over here because he never leaves before laning. He'll never leave the middle of davening. He always stick it out to the end of davening. So I saw already that something was a little wrong over here. So I went back and forth and, he was very weak. And Moshe Shabbos, he was saying he had a share that was already arranged beforehand. And they came in. And they already saw that he was shvach. I was calling Dr. Ringel, who takes care of him, believe it or not, for all the years. So we were back and forth, and he rang in the middle of the shir back. They said, as soon as they heard that the doctor was on the phone, they said, oh, something's wrong. They left right away. All the people, they left, they knew right away to leave. Anyway, a couple of minutes after that, I walked out of the room, and my father, he vomited. And all of a sudden, he had such a pain that he never had in his life. Such an excruciating pain. And they knew right away to call Hatzalah. And Hatzalah came right away. And I thought, who knows, he's having a heart attack, a stroke, I have no idea. Anyway, I took a test and everything came out okay. Anyway, make a story as interesting how it happened. We went to the hospital and he was in terrible, terrible pain. We were shoving him back and up and down. And me and Avram were there, my mother, we were only three there. Everyone else was out of town. And, they didn't know what was wrong. They were taking, all different kinds of tests. Finally, they came back after an hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever it was, and they said, there's two things wrong. First of all, there's a ruptured esophagus, and there's also a collapsed lung. So the collapsed lung, then we can take care of right over here, but the ruptured esophagus is a very dangerous thing. I didn't know what a ruptured, I didn't know anything about it then, so they said, but, Dr. Bridgewell is going to come, and he's a big doctor. He's going to come in, you're in good hands. We'll take care of it all. Anyway, so they said they took care of the collapsed lung. They went upstairs. I was in the room. They had to give him some test, blue dye, to put down the esophagus to see where the rip was. Anyway, so they took it out, and all of a sudden, Dr. Bishko walks in. I'll tell you the truth. Dr. Bishkov, they said, I figured, a big doctor, is a little bit older, a few white hairs over there. They got me a little nervous, like, this is the doctor we had. I'm just like, I said, okay, that's it. So it doesn't mean that. Anyway, one thing I could say, at that moment, I don't know how they got a hold of me at that moment. And they told me, someone called up, I'm going to say, Hilam Shemai. And they said, you got to get him out of here right away. Can't make the operation over there. So he was back and forth. I'll tell you one thing about Dr. Briscoe. He didn't get nervous. He said right away, he put it back on his jacket. He said, listen, I'm here for you. Whatever you decide, it's fine. I have nothing, you said usually within 24 hours there's no problem. That's what he said that night. He said it's not, it shouldn't be, if you want to go somewhere else 100%, but you know, but I'm here to help you. He didn't get upset. He didn't, you know, whatever was going on inside, it's fine. But the fact is that at that time, you know, you want to know what where the Siyata Dishmaya comes from. You know, we had such a Siyata Dishmaya that night that someone could have a cardiac arrest on the table, and he kept on going. And he didn't stop. And the whole time he was in the hospital, there's one thing that he, all the patients in the world, he didn't take it to heart that night, and he said, I'll call back later. You know, he took my phone number, and he said, I'll call back later. He said, usually the operation takes 4 or 5 hours. So at that time, point, my brother left, and I went with my mother to the car, and my phone was running out, so we sat in the car to just to, you know, recharge a little bit. And then I was, you know, taking 4 or 5 hours. I figured, okay, everything's doing good, you know. Then in the morning, he tells me, you know, just want you to know that things weren't so good. And, you know, he went into cardiac arrest on a table, but he kept on going. And he put in the stent over there, and you know, everyone knows what happened after. But, you know, at that point, they asked my father if he, I was on the phone, and they asked my father if, you know, I couldn't take it upon my achrayas to go ahead and, you know, make the decision if we should be there or we should not be there. That wasn't my decision. My father was alert then, and I gave the phone to him. I'm sure you remember that. So it was back and forth, and finally my father decided, no, you brought down somebody over here, you can't, like, embarrass the person. You can't do that. You can't do that. You have to call them down, make it over here. That's it. So I hold, you know, everybody knows the second part of the story, but the first part of the story, not many people were over there. Nobody was there except for me and my mother. So the fact is that you have a Siyata Dishmaya. A lot of times, it's not, you know, somebody does something which is extraordinary at the right moment. That's what brings us the Siyata Dishmaya. One of a big doctor. Dr. Bishop was a very big doctor. He's a very big doctor. He doesn't need my, just the fact that he did all what he did at that moment, that shows that he's the right person for the right, at the right moment, the right job. Anyway, that's what I was going through my mind at that point with Dr. Bishop. And now we're going to